Try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait. Will this send me spiraling out of my routine?
Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again?
Fruit ruins
Never
insulin
Never eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs by 30%.
Fast for 48 hours.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear. Just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Rap snitches, telling all they business. Sit in the court, they be they own star witness. These immortal words were uttered by MF Doom and Mr. Fantastic in 2004, but they've never had more relevance than they do today. In the modern era, rappers have progressed from spinning tall tales about criminal activity, all the way to modern drill scenes recounting the exact details of crimes as though they were filling out ready-made police reports. There are plenty of notable stories of popular rappers engaging in this ill-advised behavior, but while things like Bobby Shmurda reflecting on how Mitch caught a body like a week ago didn't exactly help anyone's case when the feds came calling, those bars were practically encrypted compared to how blatant some artists were when it comes to detailing their exploits. But sometimes, a throwaway line like that is enough to fuel legal drama. Prior to his untimely passing, Draco the Ruler's reference to having RJ tied up in the back on 2016's Flex Freestyle became important evidence during his first-degree murder trial. And based on what he'd given them, the prosecution then created their own narrative about his material while he was being held behind bars.
They were doing to you, they were going through all your music and saying this guy's violent, he's this, he's that, all based off of bits and pieces from your song.
They use their own interpretations of what they think something means, or because a lot of people don't know what I'll be talking about. Half the time, I don't know what I'll be talking about.
Right.
So it's like weird in court where you trying to tell me what I mean.
Right.
It's just weird.
But, and on top of that, they were saying the Stink Team was a gang.
Yeah.
You were the leader.
I was the leader because of my name.
Right.
The ruler.
But where just one incident like this is enough to put you under the microscope of the law, some artists have made a whole career out of it. And while that kind of exposure might have made them blow up online, or given their careers a quick boost, it also blurred that line between real life and entertainment in both their music and media appearances. In fact, it's so common that it's led artists to be wary of doing interviews with people like DJ Vlad, due to their tendency to lead rappers to incriminate themselves on camera for the world to see.
Might hold you up to a high standard. I got a couple indicted. Realistically, you're a beta. Of course you wouldn't say I got anybody indicted, but you fish. No. Some of my peers, some of the people that sat in this seat aren't fast enough, intelligent enough to know when this bait being swung their way. You didn't do it, but hell yeah.
If the police ever try to seize any sort of footage, I would deny it.
You don't got to. It goes straight to the... Go straight to YouTube.
And unfortunately, there are plenty of rappers whose careers were cut short when they learned that clout isn't always worth the consequences. And this is the art of self-snitching. If informing on yourself is truly an art form, then one of its pioneers comes from the mean streets of Brooklyn. And now, he may never place his feet on the outside world ever again. Referred to as the big homie in the streets, Rod Diggs was about as real as they came in the New York hip-hop scene. Through his high-ranking position in the murderous Mad Dog Bloods, Rod emerged from the Gowanus Projects with verifiable credentials that made him a perfect candidate for a new voice of the city. And for a while, he was making big strides, even teaming up with rappers outside of New York, such as Waka Flocka Flame.
Talk about the music, man. I mean, the music, man, you know, basically we got the Vanguard movement that I'm throwing, man, the company I started this year. I've been very successful, you know what I'm saying, for the past couple months. You know, I've made a lot of progress as being a novice in this business, you know what I mean? You know, we got the GMG movement. My son off, you know what I mean? A lot of people familiar with what he's doing. You know what I mean? We got some big projects coming out of this whole camp. You know what I'm saying? And we got that collaboration with the Brick Squad. You know, myself, Bobby Flocka Flame, you know what I mean? Well, we sit here mashing right now. You know what I'm saying? We're connecting all over the board. We got that Desperado project. That's all of us coming together, all of our separate entities becoming one. And we just mashing the game, you know what I'm saying?
As the audience gained an interest in him, Rod Diggs became an increasingly well-known public figure. But he never shied away from his gang affiliations and felt that there was a misunderstanding about what it really entailed.
You know, a lot of times people say, you know, they see me and they're like, damn, he's a highly intelligent brother. You know, this and that. You know what? You're not an ignorant dude. I can see you, but you're not ignorant. So it's like, yo, why are you part of that? well, I'm a part of this because of what it stood for and what I believe in. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I have to express that to people. They be like, yo, damn, you know, you left the... You know, most of the people they probably see in their neighborhoods have a negative reflection of what we stand for, which is not what we really stand for, and they look at that, and that's their whole perception. So sometimes somebody has to give them the real, you know what I mean?
But there was a downside that arose from all this new attention, and that's the fact that it wasn't just hip-hop fans who were taking notice of his lyrical content. On tracks like Eulogy, Raw discussed his fear of going back to prison spitting.
I'ma wave the heat, I solemnly swear, before I let him give me 120 years, 120 years, imagine that there.
Later in that same song, he declares that, I'ma stop with all that, too much information will make me my own rat. And unfortunately for Raw, he was about to be proven right when a massive 23 count indictment struck.
Accused Blood's gang leader and rapper on the rise tried to counter the government's claims that he's a lord who terrorized his own community.
As Raw was taken into custody, he was defended by his friends and allies who tried to undo the damage of his public persona.
The music is basically us talking about the life that we come from, not necessarily saying this is what I did. You know, this is a very intelligent man, and this is not a man who would commit all these crimes and didn't tell you for you to use it against him.
The music videos in and of themselves and the lyrics in and of themselves would never be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But could it be something that a jury takes into consideration when they're weighing the credibility of other witnesses or weighing the credibility of other evidence? Absolutely.
But unfortunately, his bars and statements in interviews alluding to his life as a gangbanger were coupled with an FBI-NYPD probe involving more than 65 undercover purchases. As the cops built their case, his songs with Murder Team rapping partner Uncle Murda were placed in the firing line. However, his longtime collaborator claimed it was actual informants that really ensured he got locked up rather than anything he said on wax.
While he was out, were used to convict him, to put him back in prison.
They tried to use some of the lyrics that he said. It's a few records that me and him did. They tried to use some of the lyrics that he said and bring it up in the case. But they was already investigating, just trying to bring up on him. Because you know what it be? You have people that get locked up in the neighborhood that he's from, that knew him, they get locked up. They know his history as far as certain things that he might have been through. And then, you know, they see him doing different things, and it's like a get out of jail free card. Get locked up, and they start saying, well, I know he did this, or they say he did this before, he did this, and then you got a bunch of people that's trying to get out of jail saying the same thing. So it makes the feds try to build a case, because all they need is a couple people saying a few things about you, and they can build a case. And that's what he got caught up in right now, so that's the. But you know, they were trying to give him the death penalty. That just got so that's some good news. He's no longer fighting. He's no longer fighting the death penalty. That's good news.
Among those lyrics cited in the case were lines like this from their Slowed Down remix, where Diggs spit, "I don't respect the shooter because he shot me in the legs." And 2 days later, he was. See, if he was smart, he would have shot me in the head because I can't get you from my hospital bed. Now, this isn't exactly an unusual lyrical approach in hip-hop and could easily be written off as a fantasy, but when you've already got 23 charges against you and the picture of you as a hardened kingpin has been built, it's not exactly going to help either. And according to court papers cited in the Daily News at the time, this was no work of fiction. Back in the year 2000, Raw Diggs, whose real name is Ronald Heron, was shot by a rival but survived. Heron's associates allegedly killed the shooter 2 days later. He had already beaten a previous murder charge, but prosecutors suggested he was also behind the 2008 execution of Richard Russo, who was killed in a Gowanus Project elevator, as well as the killing of Victor Zapata in a Witkoff courtyard the following year. And while Uncle Murda can't say for sure that everyone was pointing the finger at Diggs, there are verifiable examples where people did. One of the most infamous is Saquon Wallace, a former dealer and hitman, who claimed that Raw once convinced him to disguise himself as a woman, complete with makeup and a wig, to carry out a hit on a rival, since that same tactic had worked for Raw before. As his defense team struggled to build a case, Raw took the bizarre step of claiming he wasn't subject to US constitutional law, insisting instead that he was a sovereign inhabitant of the country. In response, lawyers pointed to various times where he had essentially told on himself, including a since-deleted tweet where he bragged about beating a body in a case he'd previously been acquitted of. With the deck stacked against him, Raw's very public displays of his gangster credentials meant that it was easy for the court to hand down a crazy verdict of 12 life sentences plus 105 years. And while this was everything he had hoped to avoid, even fellow rappers such as Mison believed that he ultimately knew what awaited him given how he was moving.
We knowingly understand what comes with this. We want the lights and we want the glitter and we want this, but we understand the only thing that's promised is jail or death. Like, y'all want to glorify this and y'all...
Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil. Next, I take an ice bath. Ooh, feeling super healthy.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
I want to do this, but when you engage in those things, you basically, you make a contract to give up your life at some point. Nobody knows when, but you give up your life.
And in retrospect, some of those bars on tracks such as Eulogy seem to support the notion that he knew where he was headed and had begun to come to terms with it. Given how prophetic the song was, I can only imagine Ra was already seeing the writing on the wall at this point, under surveillance, receiving indictments, etc. Now 12 years into his first life sentence, Ra Diggs holds the special distinction of being the first rapper residing in ADX Florence, the US's only supermax prison. He shares a home with some of the most notorious criminals in the world today, including founding members of the Aryan Brotherhood and convicted terrorists. In fact, it's so feared that even former wardens have spoken out about how brutal this prison, where they're held in solitary for 23 hours a day, really is.
Exclusive interview, a former warden and a former inmate tell us death is easier than life at the federal supermax.
It's as isolated as the prisoners who call it home. The prison called ADX Florence is a tomb for the living.
Despite the regular campaigns to free him that you see online when a rapper is incarcerated, the likelihood of Ra coming home anytime in the next century is very slim. But he's not completely given up, and is still showing his prowess with the bars during rare contact with the outside world.
A couple steps, he steps around and he slugged me. He says, "I ain't trust nobody but me. There's money in my pocket, nigga, plus I kept that pocket. What's a big man, James Harden? Step up to me like they playing in the garden."
Yet for every case like Diggs, there are others where there was at least a light at the end of the tunnel after it all went down. Among those who actually managed to escape with their life intact after a lengthy bid is Cali rapper X-Rated. A notable member of the Garden Block Crips, he was active in both the streets and the studio all at once. But shortly after his debut album Psychoactive was released, his own music would be used against him, tying him to the home invasion of Patricia Harris, the mother of a rival gang member. She was shot through the heart in March 1992 when gang members stormed her home looking for rivals, and police claimed that the rapper was the ringleader. On his part, X-Rated maintained it was all set up, and that he wouldn't have purposefully killed the rival's mother because the code among criminals forbids it.
"I don't have no indictment for gang culture. I'm not that person. I don't think that's the correct method for gang diversion anyway, to tell you to hate something you love and then think we don't have a conversation about me changing my life. That wouldn't work for me. So all I can say is just that these people called and said this was an error. That wasn't something someone intended to do. And if it had been a house full of gang members, hey, I'd be on the road, you know, because I would have happily all of them. That's where I was at with my psychology. I would have done that. I thought that was perfectly acceptable behavior."
However, not everyone agreed, and before long, everything he'd ever said or done was helping to build a case. Due to a line on his album, which spoke of kicking doors down and mamas, prosecutor Pete Harnd argued that this was practically a prediction of the slaying of Patricia Harris. When the music was played in court, prosecutor Pete Harnd said he could see the victory in the jury's horror. Determined to keep it real, X-Rated admitted to being a gang member when on the stand, with Harnd later commenting that he was speaking honestly at least, but I don't think it was necessarily a wise course of action. Although he said that he could have testified and gone home, X-Rated left it in the hands of the court. This turned out to be a mistake, as the most white middle-class jury was clearly offended by his music. According to Harnd, it may not have been the reason they convicted him, but it played a powerful role in shaping their decision. Another thing that was used to ensure his conviction was the cover of Psychoactive itself, with cops and investigators claiming that the caliber of the pistol he held to his head matched the one he used in the murder.
"The cover photo shows X-Rated holding a gun to his own head, taken weeks before the Harris murder. This is similar to the types used in the Harris shooting. Detectives cannot find. Sacramento County DA officials may subpoena the record company for the unreleased recording.
This hysteria came not only from what they witnessed, but also from the songs they included on the project.
Yeah, I'm killing my daddy and nephews.
17-year-old rap singer X-Rated is one of five teenagers accused in the murder of 42-year-old Patricia Harris. Just 2 days before the X-Rated finished this recording. The lyrics of the song called The Murder are hauntingly similar to the fatal shooting of Patricia Harris. Part of it goes, I'm knocking down doors, I'm killing mamas, daddies, nephews, I'm killing daughters, sons, and sparing you. William Harris, the surviving husband of Patricia, is confused by it all. But he says the song and the murder of his wife may be related.
And they used the album for conjecture that was the murder weapon. Because they didn't find the murder weapon, there was no way to ever say it was. Nobody said it was. So they really just used it to say, see, here he is holding a...
Right, because on the cover, it has you pointing a to your head, and they're trying to say that this was the same type of that was used in a...
Right, which is just
conjecture. But they never found the actual weapon.
They never found the gun.
Sentenced to 31 years behind bars, X-Rated had a tough life in prison, where he almost lost his life when a corrections officer allegedly put a hit out on him. But in his version of the story, he handled the situation before it could go left.
And so my instincts is too close. I went straight at him and bap, bap, bap. He got dropped. And it turns out that was the person that had the primary weapon that would have been most harmful. And so now everybody else is thinking now, and you're supposed to run. Somebody pulled a knife on you, you're supposed to run. But Barry and Dooney and others, I knew that's if you turn your back, you're done.
Yeah.
You gotta make it, we gotta do this. And in doing so, you could look that man in his eyes, Kev. And I got a couple scratches and scrapes and bruises, but ain't nobody damn near nothing.
Damn.
That's a lie. And so the reason they think that lie is because when I was getting, so I'm in a room and they looking, they examining, and I got a motherfucker asking me questions, and the cops are mad about it. The nurses and shit,
right,
are angry at this dude, and they like, hey man, excuse me, and they were, checking out to see if I'm in a mortal danger right now. Right. And he's like, who did it? And so I close my eyes and lean back. I swear to God, I swear on my mother's life, fully conscious, fully fucking fine, other than these scratches and what, adrenaline through the roof, course, I don't feel course, no pain.
But as you could probably tell from that interview, it wasn't conducted over the phone or in the pen. After spending 26 years in the penitentiary for a crime he didn't commit, X-Rated was released. Miraculously, his music career isn't even over either, with the rapper signing to Tech N9ne's Strange Music following his release. 26 years in jail, now signing a national deal, and performing in front of thousands across the country. Good for him. You know he is as happy as can be. Given his talents on the mic, there was always a feeling that the conviction robbed the scene of a potential star. But for other notorious individuals who had a tendency to tell on themselves, their ability to self-snitch always outshined whatever they had to offer as an artist. Here, we have the story of A.R. Ab. When it comes to perfecting the art of snitching, the most prolific of all time might be Philly's A.R. Ab. A member of the OBH crew alongside Dark Low, A.R. Ab was beating murder cases from 2005 onwards, and even survived being shot 10 times in 2011. The only problem was that at times, it felt like every time you pointed a camera in his face, he was going to confess to a whole bunch of crimes that you didn't even know he was responsible for. At times, he even ratted on his friends without thinking anything of it.
You cowards, man. Come see us, man. I swear to God, you come down this block, you gonna get filled up with so much smoke, nobody gonna make it off the block. I promise you won't make it off this motherfucker. Block, man. On everything I love, you come up on us, man, you're not gonna make it. Niggas gonna blow your shit clean off, man.
Over time, this became a reputation that basically made him a meme in hip-hop, with full compilation videos being devoted to times where he spoke without thinking.
I already took 13 shots. And I don't know what it's for, you know why? Because I kidnapped. I robbed.
I'm gonna get it. I'm a type of dude, I can't be broke. You see, I got this whole building, I fixed this shit up. What? I don't make no money off rent. I extort people. So one of my hustles got shot a lot of times behind it.
Although he was generally a regional star, A.R. Ab propelled to global fame by being referenced on Drake's Meek Mill diss track, Back to Back. As he spit, I drove here in the Wraith listening to A.R. Ab. Suddenly, it looked like he might be progressing from mixtapes to making major money in rap.
Did that kind of change people's perception of you?
Yeah. So, like, now everybody kind of, like, take me serious now. You know, you gotta understand, like, a lot of people know my street reputation. So they whole thought process of me is Ab don't really rap. He just out here running around with acting crazy. And when Drake mentioned my name, it opened up a lot of ears who didn't know who I was. And they say, you know what, listen to his music. It kind of made me say, I'm gonna take this serious, man.
Although he was grateful for the legitimacy that this brought to his career, the problem was that it placed a greater spotlight on him. And the cops had plenty of material to work with from his high-profile interviews.
Yeah, I made a lot of money on the streets. Not like Lord Big Meech money, but like I made hundreds of thousands of dollars on the streets. You feel what I'm saying? I got little cousins and little brother who was already this shit. People. You understand what I'm saying? We had a rap group of like four or five artists, man. Two of them in jail for right now. Two different murders right now. And these happen to be the same guys I was with when me and Cassie got locked up for the murder. These is my rap group people. And you got that nasty in the streets, whereas though.
Following the biggest name drop of his career, AR Ab's momentum would be brought to a crushing halt. This was following an indictment based on his role in a trafficking ring. Amid the offenses that he faced, police pointed to one of his tracks as evidence, linking him to the murder of rival dealer Robert Johnson. I'll have the whole city scared. Stand near the home. I call Taz and tell him, bring that dude's head to me. Later, AR Ab's associate Dantes Taz Dewar ultimately pleaded guilty to Johnson's murder. After the court had heard all the evidence, he was handed a sentence of 45 years. And according to legal experts, his team didn't make things any better for him.
And what happened at ARAB's sentencing was a tragedy. The judge, before he announces the sentence, says, young man, you've been sitting in my courtroom listening to the statements of the victims, listening to the prosecutor discuss your crimes, and the entire time you've had your hands folded like this, dismissive and jeering. You don't look contrite. You don't look like you respect this process. I have the ability here today to give you a range of sentences. It could be anywhere from, you know, here to 45. And what I'm gonna do, based on your behavior here today, I'm giving you the max. And if I was AR's lawyer, I gotta be in tune with my client, right? I gotta, before he goes in there, let him know that, bro, keeping it real goes wrong. You think you're gonna go in there, you're gonna stand tall. They won't break you if you act contrite. They'll break you if they give you another 20 years.
Now facing four decades in jail, AR Ab's story shows what happens when you spend too much time trying to convince the world that you're running the streets rather than continuing with business in silence. And now it feels like all the posturing was for nothing. He was so adamant to prove he was real too. 45 years. Everyone and everything you care for is then gone. For what? For so many of these young men, it often feels like they were products of their environment. At times, they even momentarily seem like they might uplift it after their difficult beginnings in life. But for someone like Atlanta's Rallo, his journey has been a roller coaster, and his tendency to incriminate himself certainly didn't help matters. Raised by a single mother, a young Rallo would end up homeless between the ages of 12 to 14. His father was making money in the streets as a drug dealer, but that didn't help him, considering that they didn't have a relationship. Despite them being distant, Rallo ended up entering into the same line of work as his father, and by the time he was 16 years old, he had been detained in juvenile detention centers 32 times for selling drugs and shootings. After he envisioned a better life as an MC, Rallo used his connections to not only maneuver his way through the streets, but to get his rap career underway. At the age of 19, he dropped his debut project, Famerican Gangster, with the help of his friend Young Scooter. Through his mentor, he got featured with the likes of Future on Can't Lie, and eventually, he'd be rubbing shoulders with the likes of Gucci Mane and 21 Savage. Meanwhile, Rallo used his status as a real street sweeper to garner a status as a hood legend, and this enabled his operation to surpass whatever his father would have imagined during his days slinging drugs. But the problem is that he wanted everyone to know about just how much he'd come up in the world, even if a lot of the proceeds weren't always gained through legal means.
Look on Google, and they say that I'm nickel $500,000.
Hey, listen here. The apartments cost $2 million, nigga. That car cost $500,000, nigga. That here Academy event, nigga, I paid $100,000 a piece for them bitches. I was the first nigga in the city with them motherfuckers. So you need to go on and tell Google, stop lying on me.
Attempting to launder some money he was raking in, Rallo bought an entire block and owned 26 apartment units while giving a percentage of his money back to his community.
We got the men, we sit up here and we pray, we ain't on no
Shit, we ain't selling no dope over here in the apartment. I'm Mr. Dial Fool. I been did that. Ain't gotta do that again in my life. You can down there call this a homeless shelter if you want to.
But when he wasn't overseeing his empire, Rallo was known to run his mouth about the inner workings of it all in a way that couldn't help but raise eyebrows amid law enforcement.
I was the biggest drug dealer in the bluff for a long period of time. I had the bluff and I had Simpson. I had the best quality drugs, and I also had large quantity for a lower price. You know what I'm saying? So I was out beating all my competition around the way. Like I said, I had all my dudes. We just built this a drug empire. And
when asked if he had any regrets, Rallo insisted it was simply all he knew. As entertaining as Rallo's interviews were, this was part of the problem for him. Where real G's move in silence, he was doing the opposite of keeping a low profile and was often caught self-snitching. Due to essentially taking the stand on his interviews, it didn't exactly keep the police off his back. So even when he tried to go legit, there was still a target on his back, and his tendency to flex his money really didn't help. Plus, the fact that he had a habit of mocking the cops for their impoverished lifestyles compared to him probably made him an even bigger target for law enforcement.
They be at home like, damn, I ain't gonna never make it in life. Like, like how you gonna ever make some money out of this? But you agree. I think if you arrest somebody, that shit like murder. You f***ing somebody. Look at his old pussy ass, you know?
His bomb man probably make $45,000 to $48,000
a year. He gotta say yes sir, no sir to him. Shit, he might well come work for me. We got the dog food. Now accept the application, officer. Now accept the application. But we tell him, all shit, pop shit.
12 can't stop shit.
Clean ain't one bit.
I cannot hit.
Every day of my life, I wake up 10-20 million dollars. So when you wake up to? What you got, 10,000, 20,000 in your account? Even if you saved up that within a 5-year span?
And eventually, his luck would run out when his private plane was caught pulling into DeKalb Peachtree Airport with 444 pounds of marijuana on it. In terms of street value, that's around $1 million worth of weed. After he was taken into custody, Rallo was held without bond. But he wasn't going down without a fight. And soon, his manager, Queen, told the media that he was being unfairly persecuted.
Fat America is the record label that Rallo started. He started that so that he'll be able to sign artists. He signed himself and put out his own music.
And there are a lot of different allegations brought against him. Mm-hmm. Possession of drugs with intent to distribute, mm-hmm. allegations of being affiliated with a gang, and two different incidents where police are saying they found marijuana with the street value of nearly $2 million. It's a lot that's written in the documents. You know, what's your response to all of that?
The sad part is I don't understand why when black people come together, it can be considered a gang. Just because I love my brother and I want to be around my brother, why is that a gang?
She goes on to say the artist may have been targeted because of his unapologetic music.
He has been targeted because of his song, because of his lyrics, because of his faith.
His Instagram is also mentioned in the complaint documents. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction when you saw that they actually quoted an Instagram caption?
I mean, everybody knows that Instagram is for entertainment. How many people that you know put on a show for Instagram? Everyone.
Despite the fact that he was facing a very grim future, Rallo refused to roll over. And when the cops tried to get him to cooperate, he wasn't having it. In an IG post in 2019, his team revealed that the government offered him 5 years on his birthday. He smiled, laughed, got off the phone with his lawyer, and fed his entire dorm bags of commissary. But ultimately, he hit a stumbling block to freedom in 2020 when his bond was revoked. After prosecutors presented evidence that Rallo had continued participating in the distribution of drugs following his arrest in this case and while in custody, apparently the mother of Rallo's children had written notes that the prosecutors were able to obtain, which said things like, save up every dollar you receive from grandma and keep count of all the kids at dad's house so you can know how much you got at all times. A separate set of documents allegedly had values for ounces of food, and a note that every ounce is 28 grams. Those documents demonstrate Defendant Davis's efforts to continue distributing narcotics after his arrest in this case, the prosecutor wrote. There simply can be no other conclusion from his efforts to establish pricing and distribution for 8-balls and grams, his instruction against the use of shake, and his warning to be wary of law enforcement listening. Knowing he was caught, Rallo eventually pleaded guilty to various charges, leading his sentence to being reduced from 97 to 20 months. Released in 2023, he emerged and immediately took aim at those people who had snitched on him while defending notable YSL informant Lil Woody. What about all 17 of them informants that told the feds I shot and killed over 8 people? Rallo began his message about legal woes. Y'all ain't on social media asking them for page 8, or going at them like y'all going at Lil Woody. I see y'all still f***ing with them every day. Now seeking to rebuild his career, there are some who would argue that Rallo got off lightly if he was truly a kingpin. But others felt that his journey set a poor precedent, leading to not only his own downfall, but that of others who looked to emulate him. Coldest part is that a lot of the young-minded hustlers saw it, tried to mimic it for social media, and then got indicted for copying his footsteps. This is exactly how the OGs didn't move. Clout is a hell of a drug. There are grounds for this, because sometimes rappers aren't even established when they begin to incriminate themselves in ways that prove unsalvageable. For a brief window in time, Pop Out Blick was believed to be the next big rapper from Philly. He even hailed from the same neighborhood as the late PNB Rock.
Rock was definitely a big inspiration, no bullshit. Bro definitely motivated, you feel me? He showed niggas we from the same block, so he showed niggas shit possible, niggas could do that shit, you feel me? Growing up and shit, we watching that shit really evolve type shit, you feel me? So that shit different, bro, I ain't gonna lie.
And despite his own errant moves, he advised others to stay far away from the street life he'd led.
So before we get out of here, what's just a message that you can give to the youth?
I'ma keep it being to all the little niggas out there, that fuck with me, don't hop in the streets, real shit, bro, that shit not thorough, bro, don't let a crowd influence y'all, no bullshit, don't let nobody influence y'all to do some nut shit that y'all know, you feel me, go to school, bro, real shit, bro, this shit ain't fun, bro, this shit scary, I'm 18, bro, and look at my situation.
But clearly, he didn't take his own advice, and before long, his crimes and his decision to chronicle them in his music would catch up with them. On the evening of April 28th, two separate cars of young men pulled up to a house with the intention of making a deal for a gun worth $1,000. However, what the naive salesman didn't realize was that Blick, alongside 23-year-old Tyree Lennon and 17-year-old Khalif Fresgi, had no intention of spending any money that day. Once inside the house, things turned volatile, and it eventually devolved into a shootout between the rival crews. By the end of the battle, 3 men were dead, and another had to go to the hospital with a bullet wound in his abdomen. When police arrived on the scene, they discovered the body of 14-year-old Salah Fleming in the doorway, while 17-year-old Malik Bellard was found unresponsive on the sidewalk. Although it's unclear exactly what took place and who shot who, Pop Out Blick's crew took a loss too, as Khalif Fresgi, otherwise known as Leaky, was found on the front porch. Soon, a warrant was issued for the arrest of Pop Out Blick, but he had no intention of turning himself in. When you're trying to evade the police, the strategy is usually to keep as much of a low profile as possible. Instead of keeping his head down, Pop Out Blick kept dropping music. While that's inadvisable enough, what sealed his fate was that the tracks he was dropping were basically a signed confession to the crimes. On the track Took a Risk, for example, Pop Out basically gave a play-by-play of what went down that day, and even had the audacity to name his fallen victims. Over the course of the song, he declared that Salah fell on his chest and then he started spitting up, and Leaky got left on the sidewalk. He ain't getting up. Later, he continued to disrespect, spitting, "We got 2 new Vicks. We call them Double L for Law and Leaky." Later claiming that them dudes died because they ain't give it up, and he said he was a risker. He took a risk trying to meet with us. They got ghost Glocks with fake buttons. They can't beef with us. Blick was really upping the disrespect rather than trying to outrun the warrant. Soon, he doubled down with Double Coffins, a track which celebrated the death of 2 men and basically told the story of what happened. "They just trying to catch a shooting. Them young boys died for playing tough," said Blick. Later adding, "Them young boys thought that we were cool, and then we double-crossed them." Incriminating as this was, he was about to seal his fate when his pride wouldn't allow rumors to circulate. After an alert from a Philly Crime Update Twitter account revealed that a man had been shot numerous times in West Philly, various crews would say that Hop Out Blick was the victim and that they had carried out the crime. But the next day, Blick went on live to let the world know that he was alive and well.
Yeah, bro, you see how they controlling though? Like, niggas really jerking right. Yeah, they jerking right, bro. They scattered, bro.
What?
Nah, bro, that's not gangsta, bro. They scattered, bro.
Whether or not this revealed his location, it only took 8 days for the cops to close in, and both he and Tyree Lennon were taken into custody. Once the police had them where they wanted, they were charged with 2 counts of murder, attempted murder, robbery, and illegal gun possession. If convicted, the 2 men are likely to spend life in prison. But what most people didn't know at the time was that almost immediately after he dropped his most vicious tracks, which dissed his dead enemies, Hopout tried to launch his contingency plan with a post to his Instagram that acted as a disclaimer. I do not have any involvement in drugs or sales of drugs, nor partake in any involvement in street crime, he wrote. This account is strictly for entertainment purposes only, but this won't exactly wash when you consider that recently, Blick unveiled a music video from inside the prison, where his old persona is still on full display. In the process, he's likely jeopardized whatever defense his team is building in the process. However, he's hardly the only rapper whose own youthful exuberance and decision to blend his real-life crimes into his music videos has had a terrible outcome. Just look at the tragic story of Tay-K. Born Taymore Trevon McIntyre, Tay-K first picked up a mic at the tender age of 14 as a member of the Daytona Boys in his adopted hometown of Dallas, Texas. Originally from Long Beach, Tay and his sister were forced into foster care due to a fractious relationship with his mother, who, according to the rapper, was a member of the Baby Insane Crips. Left to fend for himself in Texas, Tay-K joined an Arlington branch of the Hoover Crips, and before long, he was implicated in a host of gang activity. In 2015, he had his first brush with the law when he was placed in the passenger seat of fellow Daytona boy Eric Jamal Johnson's car as Johnson gunned down a college student. Johnson was later sentenced to 44 years for the murder, while Tay-K avoided prosecution. But another crime was about to put him on the map and lead to his strange career trajectory going down in hip-hop history. Back in 2017, the Texas-based MC, who was just 16 at the time, stood accused of murdering Ethan Walker in cold blood after a home invasion went wrong. Later, he cut off his ankle monitor and went on the run to evade the cops. But rather than just disappearing, he informed the whole world of his plans. On March 27th, Tay-K tweeted, "This house arrest, 12 is gonna have to catch me on hood." From there, Tay-K chronicled the experience of being a wanted fugitive on his viral track, The Race, which reached number 44 on the Billboard charts and was later certified platinum. Seen holding his own wanted poster in the music video, this track made him the first rapper to ever make a worldwide hit while legitimately being on the run from the cops. But his crime spree didn't end there. And as he travels from Texas to New Jersey, he allegedly killed 23-year-old Mark Saldivar and attacked 65-year-old Oni Pepe. After being apprehended in New Jersey, Tay-K was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to 55 years in prison. During the trial, the lyrics and visuals behind The Race were admitted as evidence for the prosecution. And despite his attorney's efforts to clear his name, this was one situation he just could not outrun.
Tay agreed to participate in a robbery. Tay participated in a robbery. But he stood up here yesterday in front of you and in front of this court and accepted responsibility for what he agreed to do and what he participated in, and pled guilty to the robbery by threats using a gun, threatening somebody with a gun in counts 3 and counts 4. And the boys were supposed to come in and hold everybody off, and Tay-K had a bag that was gonna get the money and the drugs from under the couch. Well, that's not what happened. Everything went tragically wrong in there.
As it stands, he'll be 74 years old when he's released from jail. But he hasn't given up on having his conviction overturned. Taking to Twitter in 2023, he wrote, "I'm at war within. I feel like a hamster here. They're literally treating me like a ferret in here." Previously, Tay-K has also rallied against the length of his sentences and said that prejudice was behind it. "I really need just one chance at adulthood," he tweeted. "I bet if I was a little white kid, they wouldn't have given me no 55 years for a crime I was alleged to play the most insignificant role in when I was 16. They would have argued that my mind wasn't fully developed and gave me rehabilitation and a second chance at adulthood. One of my co-defendants was a white girl who was 16 just like me. he declared. They didn't certify her as an adult, but they certified me and Pimp as adults. Pimp got 30. I got 55. She ended up getting 10 years of probation without no deal. That girl at home right now. Amid asking Kim Kardashian for help to free him, Tay-K's occasionally active X account has also been used to discuss the violence that he's been around in the 5 years he's been behind bars. A dude in the cell by me killed his cellie with a tray and stood on his head. Whoa. He said in January of 2023. And even though his attempts to be freed are being largely ignored by the law, Tay-K has insisted that he's renounced the life of crime and that the merciless man in the race video no longer exists.
Like, I'm in jail. I don't know. If I do get out, I know I'm home. I'm done robbing, getting laced. I'm not doing none of that.
For Tay-K, his links to the street meant that he never really got to reap the rewards of his blossoming career. Perhaps if he had the chance to escape via his rhymes, he wouldn't even be in the predicament he's in today. But sometimes, the street life follows you all the way into the charmed existence of a platinum-selling hip-hop star, and that same tendency towards self-snitching can put you in a whole lot of trouble. If you're a hip-hop fan, then you'll be aware of who Lil Durk is by now. A leading figure in Chicago hip-hop, Durkio became known as the voice of his generation. But this wasn't without heavy losses. Most notably, the passing of his dear friend and O-Block General King Von, a signee to his OTF label, who was killed in Atlanta following a confrontation with fellow rapper Quando Rondo's entourage.
I'm thinking it's some regular individuals, so I'm letting this group come by. Next thing you know, a nigga hit me. Boom, bam. Man, like, I lied to you not, man. I lied to you not. It's like I had an out-of-body experience.
But while Quando remains alive and well, it seems like Durk may have been more rattled by online comments than he acted and set out on a plan to get his revenge. After the internet relentlessly urged him to slide and avenge King Von's death, a murder plot began to take shape. And just days after he was given the key to the city of Chicago, Durk's life came crashing down after it was alleged that he greenlit a murder-for-hire plot that resulted in the death of his longtime foe, Quando Rondo's close ally Lil Pop, leading to him famously cry in anguish as the cops arrived.
He's pulling out a man who had been shot in an SUV. Savannah rapper Quando Rondo, a passenger in that car, frantic.
Durk later sampled this in a song, making it clear how deep the bad blood between them went. They be on my page like Slide for Vaughn, I know they trolling me. Outside with y'all big homie, beyond, I keep them folks with me. Got it back in blood, y'all just don't know, that's how it's supposed to be. Called him for a feature just to kill him cause we know he's sweet. Later on that same track, he seemingly referred to Lil Pop's death when he said, "You better do what Nardo said, cause people die for pumping gas." A clear sub about how Pop was killed at a gas station. Another verse of note was his contribution to Wonderful Wayne and Jackie Boy with Babyface Ray, a song which prosecutors said featured him recounting how the killing of Lil Pop came about. Told me they got the addy, go go. Got the location, go go. Green light, go go go, Durk raps in the song. Look on the news and see your son. You screaming no no. But the self-snitching wasn't limited to music either. During an appearance on Academics' Off the Record podcast, recorded after Pop's passing, Durk slyly said that all of the Slide for Vaughn discussion had died down for some weird reason.
You be seeing comments a lot?
They kind of chilled out a little bit.
Yeah, though. We different in Iraq.
I feel like you're speaking in parables. I'm trying to like decode it a little bit, but it's...
We have nothing to do with nothing. I'm saying, that's like me just claiming something I want to.
Fast forward to now, and a murder-for-hire plot came together, with Durk allegedly telling his associates that they shouldn't book no flights under no names involved with me. But when they headed to Cali to carry out the hit, they did so under one of his record label's credit cards. Allegedly, the apparent assailants OTF Didi, Vonny, and 072 Boogie head to California to meet another member by the name of Kayon Grant. Intent on catching up to Quando and his crew, they tailed them throughout the day until eventually opening fire. Once they were snatched up by the feds, Durk allegedly attempted to flee the country, booking flights to Switzerland and Dubai, but was captured before he could successfully escape. Since then, things have been looking grim for Durkio, with claims that snitching was rampant in the OTF ranks, meaning that he may well be cooked. But it's clear that he's not going down without a fight, and among the main things he's trying to fight against is his music being admissible as evidence. In April of 2025, he released a video statement decrying attempts to use his bars and insisting that they were art. And since then, it has been ruled that prosecutors won't be allowed to do so following the public outcry against it. But not every rapper has a platform like Dirk's to get that word out. And all too often, prosecutors can form an opinion of the accused through their music and lyrics long before it even gets to the trial itself. With that in mind, we need these rappers, both aspiring and established, to be a little wiser about what they share. Because otherwise, they're just gonna keep giving the courts absolute home runs when it comes to presenting evidence. It's time for the era of self-snitching to end. Because if it can affect someone as big as Lil Durk, who knows who'll be next to have their lyrics read back to them in a court of law?